So it's great to have everyone on the call. We're just going to wait a couple of minutes for everyone else to join. In the meantime, on the chat, we're going to enable it. If you can just tell us where you're coming in from, it'd be great to just know the place and the location from which you are joining us. We're going to try and open it up so you can message everyone. But some of you are messaging me. We've got someone from Essex, Nottingham, Florida. Yeah, you can message everyone now. Cambridge, Nottingham. Oh my God, too far. San Francisco, I saw there. Toronto. We've even got someone from India, 1:30 in the morning. Thank you so much for making the time. Trinidad and Tobago, France, Poland. It's an honor to be with you. The last few days have been so exciting for us. We've been getting traction with the Think Gita community and bringing together all of us in this like-minded network. We've now, over the last weeks, had about 2,000 people join the Think Gita community, and we're so excited for what's about to come up. And today is really our inaugural session, and we're going to be sharing a little introduction to the Bhagavad Gita and a little introduction to our Think 101 Bhagavad Gita course. Just to share with all of you that Think Gita is an initiative that we put together because we just had an inspiration that we want wisdom. We want to change the world through wisdom, and we want to really try to explore these teachings of the Bhagavad Gita in a very practical way, in a life-changing way. And so we put this network together, and our three principles are insightful. So whatever philosophy we teach or whatever wisdom we share, we're going to try and make it really, really practical, really, really relevant. We're going to give you an opportunity to question it, challenge it, analyze it. And we're going to really look at it from all angles of vision. The second principle of Think Gita is interactive. So this is not just us sitting on a pedestal giving you a sermon, but it's going to be a chance for everyone to share their perspectives, their views, their experiences. We're going to have some of you on up here spotlighted, and we're going to have wonderful discussions. So it's all an interactive community of exchange. And the third principle of Think Gita is inclusive. Here we don't charge for any courses. We try to make it relevant for everyone. It's also inclusive in the sense that we have people from all backgrounds who are joining Think Gita. Some people have never read the Gita. Some people have read the Bhagavad Gita 20 times. Some people have a spiritual path they're on, and some people are just exploring. And that's wonderful. And we honor all of you for coming, and we really hope that you'll share your perspectives to enrich the dialogue and the community. And I stand in front of you not as someone who knows it all, but just a searcher, as we all are on this call, a searcher trying to find truth and look at ways in which we can live better and have a more beautiful world and existence. And so I don't really see myself as a teacher, but more of a facilitator for all of us to come together and have discussion. And that's a little bit just that I wanted to share with you. In today's session, we're going to have a little bit of an introduction to Think Gita 101. And then we're going to have an opportunity for some questions and answers just to get the discussion going. And then we're also going to give you a little demonstration of our network, the mighty network of Think Gita, which has many individuals who have joined. And just to show you how that works and how we can really utilize that platform. And before I continue, I'd like to introduce my good friend, my partner in crime, in spiritual crime, Raj, over to you.
Thank you so much, Keshav Swami, for introducing the session and bringing us all together. I'm really excited about what's to come. It's 2023, and it's going to be a great year for us all. And what great way to start than have spiritual wisdom. And maybe I can just say a bit about you, Keshav Swami, because you know you are the mastermind behind what we're going to do and share. So for those of you who are seeing Keshav Swami for the first time, he's actually a resident monk, and he's been a monk for about 20 years. And he was inspired from the Gita at a young age. And now he's like a very senior monk and inspiration to a lot of people. He's a mentor, he's an author, he's an inspirational speaker. He travels, he does a lot of talks. He talks at corporate events and the big four banks and different places. So yeah, we're very fortunate. And I think one great thing is how, one thing I can definitely share with everyone, how digestible and bite-sized the wisdom is going to be, because the way Keshav Swami has shared it is very practical in our life. So I guess the one thing I would recommend is, take notes, really focus, concentrate, and look at how we can apply the wisdom. I'm very excited. I've got my pen and notepad already. So yeah, really looking forward to it. And thank you all for joining. We're really grateful that you've taken the time today.
Yeah. And just the kind of logistical thing, we're kind of periodically opening the chat and closing it, not because we're trying to censor you or anything of that nature, but just because of the sheer volume of people on the call, if we open it, it could be very disturbing. So we might just have to do that. Someone saying, I've got tech issues. I hope it's okay. I don't know if it's me. Okay, some people are saying they can't see me. Can you see me, Raj?
Yeah, we can see you. We can see you and we can hear you.
Can everyone just give me a thumbs up if they can see me and hear me okay? Yeah, you can see me and hear me. Okay, so maybe it's... okay, all right, cool. All right, if there's a problem, you can shout out to me somehow, get my attention. Everyone, before we begin, I want to do something which we always do before a spiritual discussion. This is something I guess we learn on the first day of joining the monastery, that gratitude is such an important thing. And they say gratitude is the mother of all qualities. When we're grateful for what we've been given, then all other good qualities of kindness, tolerance, patience, appreciation, all of these things come. I often think of gratitude like digestion. If you put so much food in your mouth, then you need to digest it. And what the digesting process does is it, number one, helps you to gain nourishment from all that food that has gone in. And not only that, it opens up more room for you to kind of later on eat more, because you can't eat on a full stomach. And so I see gratitude like digestion. And therefore, what we often do before we begin any kind of spiritual discussion is we just say a prayer of gratitude. So I'm going to bring up a prayer of gratitude. It's a Sanskrit prayer. I'm sure many of you are familiar with Sanskrit. It's a really, really beautiful language. And over the coming weeks, we're going to share more of this language and more of these prayers with you. And a prayer of gratitude that we often recite before we begin any kind of spiritual discourse. Oh, I'm going to repeat it, and maybe some of you who are on the call behind your computers.
Okay, it seems like we've lost Keshav Swami. Is that right? Okay, so yeah, we're going to do a prayer of gratitude. So we'll just give it a moment, and hopefully Keshav Swami is back.
Okay. I'm back, if you can just... sorry about that. I don't know what happened there. Can you see my my prayer of gratitude now?
Yeah, we can see it.
Yes, so please do join me in this wonderful, beautiful Sanskrit prayer. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave namaha. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Perhaps all of you can try and learn this by the end of the course so you can tell your friends you know Sanskrit. It's a very beautiful prayer. I offer my respects unto my spiritual teachers who have opened my eyes, which were blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. They say more unfortunate than being born blind is if we're born with sight but no vision. And so many of us can see by the grace of the divine, but how many of us have real vision to see the journey that we're on, real vision to see all the opportunities that surround us, real vision to uncover beyond the lies of the world and see real truth. That is the grace of spiritual teachers who come and open our eyes to what's beyond what we see simply with our physical eyes. And really, spiritual discussion, Think Gita, is an initiative to do this. And today we're beginning. And our first session today is entitled Progressive Disruption. I don't think any of us on this call enjoy disruption. Disruption is annoying, it's frustrating, it just delays us. It feels like a hindrance. But actually, I want you today to try and look at disruption in a different way. When you're speeding or when you're going in your car, hopefully not speeding, but going from one direction to another, one place to another, then on the journey, you'll find that there are traffic lights. On the journey, you'll find that there are restricted entries, which somehow always end up breaking your wing mirror. On your journey from one place to another, you'll probably encounter roads where there are speed bumps. And you wonder, why are there traffic lights? Why are there speed bumps? Why are there restricted entries? It's just an hindrance. It's a disruption. I just want to get from one place to the other. Why so much disruption in the process? Why not just be free to just drive? But all of us know that all of those disruptive factors actually help us to get to our destination safely, effectively, and also efficiently. In other words, disruption is not always a negative thing. Disruption can often be progressive because disruption makes us stop and become more aware, become more alert, become more conscious. And disruption can sometimes help us to have better vision and reach our destination in a much better way. Today, I'm going to share with you what progressive disruption is, because this is what Think Gita is all about. Friends on the call, what we're trying to do today is disrupt our lives. This whole discussion, this whole evening, this whole course, this whole initiative is all about disruption. It's all about disrupting our lives, but disrupting our lives in such a way that we become more progressive. I'm going to ask all of you on the chat to just tell me of companies or organizations or brands who you feel have disrupted the way we live and now have become part of something we do every single day. Can you think of any disruptive brands that have changed or shaped our lives? Uber, Apple, Amazon, Tesla. Yeah, these are all some of the disruptive brands. They came in and they said, no, there's a different way to do things. They challenged the status quo. And in the beginning, everyone thought they were mad. They were talking about something which, you know, was untenable. But now, if you look at all of these brands that all of you are putting on the chat, you'll realize that these brands have become a part of our daily life. Deliveroo, Apple, WhatsApp, all of these brands. Yeah, you've named so many of them. Here are some of the disruptive brands of our time. Tesla. Elon Musk came in and he said, no, it's not that technology and sustainability have to be juxtaposed. They're not mutually exclusive. He brought the cutting edge technology and sustainability and created electric cars, which has created such a trend in the world today. I think there's a waiting list to get a Tesla nowadays. Monks don't know, of course. We sold our Ferraris. Netflix, they challenged it. Blockbuster had the market. Blockbuster was selling the movies and they were giving people the cinematic experience. But Netflix came in and said there's a different way. Blockbuster didn't adapt and they were blown out of the market. Netflix were a disruptive brand. They kind of began to change the way we think. Amazon. Amazon now have shops where there are no sales attendants. I don't know how you feel about that, but they change the way we buy, the way we purchase, the way we deal in commodities in this world. And now Amazon has become one of the biggest businesses in the world. Uber, changing the way we drive, the way we look at transport. Buses are always late. Trains are like hard to get hold of and taxi cabs are just way too expensive. So Uber just came up with a different way to do it. And of course, Apple. Yes, I know many of you are on your Apples. They say life was much simpler when apples and blackberries were just fruits. But nowadays, apples are not just fruits. They're something we hold and utilize. So can you see that disruption is not necessarily a bad thing? Of course, you may all have your opinions about these brands, but they undoubtedly have changed the world that we're living in. Therefore, I want you to think of disruption in a different way. Here is one of the biggest disruptors of our time, Steve Jobs, who says, here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, the round pegs in the square holes. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as crazy, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world are the ones who do. Think Gita is so much about unlocking and untapping this potential to really think and critically look at the world and ask, is there a better way to live? But what I want to share with you today is that when we're looking at a better way to live, there are three questions. What do we do? How do we do it? But why do we do it? And shall I tell you, most of the disruptors, and in fact, probably all of the disruptors that I've just mentioned to you, what they've done is they've disrupted the how and the what. These are what we call material disruptors. And apologies for my handwriting, but you can make it out. The material disruptors changed what we do. The activities, the day-to-day schedules, the operations, the functionality. They changed how we do things, the way we think about a particular activity and the sequence of events that we go through to get something done. Material disruptors like Apple, Uber, Tesla, they're disruptive. But all they've disrupted is the how and the what of what we do. But today, we're going to be looking at spiritual disruptors. Because spiritual disruptors, they come into the picture and they don't just look at the how and what of people, what people are doing in the world. But they look at the deepest question, which is, why are we doing it? If someone can allow spiritual disruption to enter into their life, so they begin questioning, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why do I consider this to be success? Why do I think if I achieve all of these things, I'll be happy? When we begin questioning why, spiritual disruption begins. And this questioning of why opens up a whole new world of discovery. And that is the potential of all of us, all 750 of us on this call coming together, we all have the opportunity to ask why. And then we all have the opportunity to go out in the world and share that message with others to create a more conscious world. Many of you may have heard me say this, but I'm going to say it again because I think it's so profound, and I'm going to give you a little bit of homework as well. If you tell a lie loud enough and long enough, a lie becomes a so-called truth. If enough people accept that truth, that so-called truth, it becomes a culture. And if that so-called culture is perpetuated from one generation to another, it becomes a tradition. And then what happens is that we're born into that tradition and we accept the parameters of life, the measures of success, the definitions of meaning that have been given to us without questioning it. I'm going to give you a bit of homework today, and we're going to open it up on the Mighty Networks later in the week. I want all of you to think about three traditions or three things you accept deeply in your life that if you analyze closely and if you look closely, it's a tradition which is based on a so-called culture, which is based on a so-called truth that's actually a lie. And if all of us look very, very closely, our lives are often led by these lies. And spiritual disruption is an opportunity to say, I'm going to expose all of the lies that I've been taught in my life, and I'm going to actually now try and look for something more conscious. And therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is a book of spiritual disruption, progressive disruption. One of the eminent people who read it, Emerson, he says, I owe a magnificent day to the Bhagavad Gita. It was the first of books. It was as if an empire spoke to us. Not just a book, an empire, a whole tradition, a whole, almost a whole universe. Nothing small or unworthy, but large, serene, consistent, the voice of an old intelligence, which in another age and climate had pondered and thus disposed of the same questions which exercise us. Dear friends, we're entering into spiritual disruption. Fasten your seatbelts, because the Bhagavad Gita is meant to help us really question our lives. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken 5,000 years ago. It was spoken on a battlefield. Ancient literatures are amazing because they can be seen on three levels. The ancient literatures are literal. They're events which happened. This was a battlefield. This was an event which actually took place in the history of the world. This is a place you can even go to today called Kurukshetra. And it was on this battlefield that Krishna and Arjuna went into the middle and had this epic conversation. One level on which spiritual literature can be seen is literal, the literal level. But another level on which spiritual literature can be seen is didactical. So while the battle is an event that happened, the battle and the conversation which ensued from it is also hugely didactical. It gives us so many lessons. It gives us so many insights and tips, and dare I say it, life hacks. But another level of spiritual literature is not that it's simply a literal event. It's not simply that it's didactical, but it's also metaphorical. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken on a battlefield because our life is like a battlefield. And each one of us on this call are fighting battles. Some of us are fighting battles with our mind, our health, our physical health. Some of us are fighting battles with in our relationships. Some are fighting battles in the world out there with opinions or different life situations. We're all facing battles. And so Arjuna, in the midst of a battlefield 5,000 years ago, doesn't have to seem so far removed from who we are, because we're all on a battlefield. And as that battle was about to commence, Krishna and Arjuna went to the middle of the battlefield. In a beautiful Sanskrit verse, just to share with you, Krishna says, or Arjuna says, Senayor ubayor madhye ratham sthapayame chuta. Arjuna says to his charioteer, Krishna, please take me to the middle of the battlefield so I can observe everyone that's assembled here for this epic trial of arms. This was billed as the greatest battle ever. And Arjuna was like the star player, the one on whose shoulders so much rested, the most successful, valiant, amazing warrior of all time. And Arjuna, as the battle was about to commence, decided to go in the middle of the battlefield. The events of the battlefield were not only being observed by Krishna and Arjuna on the battlefield, but they were also being observed by someone called Dhritarashtra in a palace far away. He was being narrated everything that was going on the battlefield. And the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita is him asking the question, what did they do on the battlefield? And then his assistant, his minister, Sanjaya, who you can see in the picture, begins narrating that Krishna and Arjuna have gone to the middle of the battlefield and they're having a conversation. But here, note the question of Dhritarashtra. He says, what did they do? Whereas when Arjuna goes to the middle of the battlefield and he looks at the whole scene, he turns to Krishna and he asks his own question. And what is his question? Why are we doing this? Some people ask the question, what? Some people ask the question, why? They say, small minds discuss people. Average minds discuss events. But great minds discuss wisdom. So Arjuna, because he asked the question why, he opened up the opportunity for wisdom to enter his life. And this is the first and most important lesson of the Bhagavad Gita, that all of us have to constantly question ourselves in our lives. Why? Why am I doing this? We should never be afraid to challenge ourselves, because they say the most dangerous phrase in the English language is, we've always done it this way. It's not dangerous to question why. It's dangerous to remain without challenging ourselves in the modus operandi of how we've always lived. And so today what I'm going to do is just very, very quickly, I'm going to tell you what actually happens in the Bhagavad Gita. When Arjuna asks the question why, then Krishna takes the opportunity to basically evolve his vision. If we can do this in our life, evolve our vision, you may not be able to change the world, but what you can do is change the way you see the world. In Sanskrit, this is known as darshan. Literally, darshan means to see. But seeing extends beyond the physical seeing. It means the way we look at the world, the way we view life, the intuitive vision of the truth that we have, how we decode reality. This is what darshan is. And there's physical seeing, which is what we see with our physical senses. Beyond that, there is mental viewing, what we see through our mind and our emotions. But there is also philosophical seeing, what we see through the eye of philosophy and wisdom. And then there is spiritual seeing, what we see once we're furnished with a spiritual vision. Arjuna, as he goes through the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is basically elevating his vision. Right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is just seeing through his physical eyes. Here's a verse where Krishna, Arjuna comes to the middle, having been taken there by Krishna. And Arjuna sees just the scene. He just sees with his physical eyes. And right now he's just seeing, observing the armies. The first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in Sanskrit is known as Sainya Darshan, which means observing the armies with his eyes. But very quickly, all of us, when we see something with our eyes, the next thing we do is we begin seeing it through our mind, our emotions, our experiences. And therefore, when Arjuna saw all the armies, immediately the next thing that kicked in was his mind, his emotions, and his own internal calculations of what would happen in the future as a result of this battle. And when he began seeing everything through his mental constructs, then he became overwhelmed, he became bewildered, he became, actually, according to the translation, depressed, because his mind became overcome with anxiety, with stress, with hopelessness. This is what happens in the world. When people simply see the world through the senses and the mental constructs that we have, then they often become hopeless. And we all know that. One of the biggest problems in the world today is mental health. Because if our vision doesn't extend beyond the physical and mental, we're unable to frame life. So then what does Krishna do, seeing Arjuna in his predicament? Arjuna is given wisdom by Krishna. And it's not just unidirectional wisdom, it's a conversation of wisdom. And Krishna begins imparting all this amazing knowledge. And when Arjuna grasps that philosophical vision, then he's furnished with a philosophical eye. And now he looks at the battlefield in a completely different way. He gets hope. He gets clarity. He begins to see what could be beyond the immediate strife that he sees around him. And later on, when that knowledge goes deeper into his consciousness, Arjuna becomes basically a person of spiritual vision. And he begins to see positivity, potential, and progressiveness in every direction. Dear friends, what is our vision? This is Krishna's question to us. When we see the world, are we simply seeing what the senses see? Are we simply seeing what our sentiments are telling us in our mind? If we simply have these visions, these two right here, we'll come to points in our life where we feel hopeless, where we feel like we don't want to get up in the morning, where we feel like we can't really see a future for ourselves. We'll come to a point where we feel like our life is at a dead end, where there's nothing more to strive for. But then, if we're able to elevate our vision and see through the scriptures, see through wisdom, which gives us another lens in which to decode our reality, then what that can do is eventually help us to see through the soul. Because according to the Bhagavad Gita, we're not material beings having a spiritual experience. We're spiritual beings on a material journey. And as spiritual beings on a material journey, as we go through life, if we can see life through the vantage point of being a spiritual being, then we will look at the world in a completely different way. The whole purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to elevate vision beyond the senses, beyond the sentiments, and through the gateway of the scriptures to ultimately develop a spiritual vision of life. This is the greatest thing someone can do in their life, and this is what the Bhagavad Gita is meant for. And what I'm going to do now, just to give you a little bit of taste, is you may then ask, but what is that? What is contained within the Bhagavad Gita that gives you this spiritual vision? And what the Bhagavad Gita discusses, what Krishna discusses with Arjuna, is basically five topics. And these five topics are so profound that they contain the entire blueprint of reality. Think about any question you have about life, and I guarantee you, within these five topics, you will find timeless principles which will help you to gain answers to those questions. And what are these five topics that Krishna talks about to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita? The first one is soul, Atma in Sanskrit. In other words, our identity. Who are we behind all the masks, behind everything the world told us to be, behind everyone's opinions and expectations of ourselves, behind all the different personalities that we put on display to the outside world? Who are we in our essence? The Bhagavad Gita begins there. And then what the Bhagavad Gita talks about is the world around us. Where did this world come from? What are its influences? How does it move in its energy? And what is the relationship between the soul and the world? Why is the soul even here? The third topic Krishna talks about is karma or activity. Because activity is the mechanism, or karma is the mechanism through which the soul's sojourn in this world is mediated. And that's the third topic of the Bhagavad Gita, karma, how we act and how there is a concomitant reaction, and a concept which helps us decode why we're in the situations we're in at the moment. The fourth topic that Krishna talks about is divinity, or Ishvara in Sanskrit. And then Krishna explains that that divinity is controlling the world, and that divinity also has a relationship with the soul. And so the fifth topic that Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita is time, because time is the mechanism through which the divinity is basically interacting with the world. And the final thing that Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita is yoga, or connection, or what is the relationship between the soul and the Supreme Soul, the soul and divinity, the soul and God. So these, dear friends, are the five topics of the Bhagavad Gita. Number one, the world. Number one, the soul. Number two, the world we're living in. Number three, karma or activity. Number four, divinity, Ishvara. And number five, kala or time. And all of these things ultimately exist because the real goal of the soul is to attain connection, spiritual connection. And when we gain that connection, that is the perfection of existence. Now, I've shared this very, very quickly with you. This is extremely profound. And today we're just laying the foundations. But what we're beginning to share with you is a picture of reality, a blueprint of reality that can help you decode lessons from everything you see every single day. This blueprint can help you understand why you're in situations, how you can get out of them. This blueprint can help you understand why you're feeling the way you do. This blueprint can give you a vision as to how you can find positivity and direction and purpose in your life. This blueprint can give you answers to why the world is going through current issues it's going through that we see on the headlines every single day. This is such a powerful structure that Krishna gives. And basically, Krishna is giving this blueprint to help us understand that there are patterns in life. But the problem is, because people don't see the patterns, people don't understand the blueprint, people don't grasp causality and why things are happening in the way they're happening, then we keep doing the same things, we keep running into the same problems, and we keep wondering why life is sometimes so frustrating. And Einstein said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And therefore, Krishna comes in as a spiritual disruptor to say, think. Don't just do what you've always been doing and running into the same problems. Think, elevate your vision, because you can begin to see things in a different way, which will help you to find real progressive solutions. I'm just sharing with you a chart on the screen, and it may seem like information overload. There's a lot of information here. This is actually the entire gamut of literature from the ancient Sanskrit canon known as the Vedas. Veda means knowledge. Vedas are books of knowledge. And here you'll see many, many different books of knowledge which are pertaining to all phenomena, material and spiritual. There are things on here that many of you may be familiar with. For example, here on the bottom here, I'm circling Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. That is part of the Vedas. And that's the place where you can learn about yoga, hatha yoga, pranayam, and of course a wider tradition which surrounds that. On this diagram, you'll see something here, Ayurveda. Many of you know about Ayurveda. Veda, as I said, means knowledge, and Ayur means life. So Ayurveda literally means the knowledge of life, medicine, understanding our body, understanding how to live in harmony with our body. This is also contained within the Vedas. Here you'll see I'm circling something else, Jyotish. This is another branch of knowledge within the Vedas, looking at astrological configurations and how the planets are affecting our lives. So here you can see the Vedas contain many, many different types of knowledge. But the Bhagavad Gita is said to actually be the essence of all of this knowledge, because the Bhagavad Gita gives us the essence of the five topics which help us to understand reality. And so the Bhagavad Gita has been read for centuries. It's been read for millennia, and many, many versions of the Bhagavad Gita have been shared with the world to get people thinking. For our course in the coming weeks, we'll be reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. If you don't have one, then you can obtain one online. It's a very beautiful version of the Bhagavad Gita. Sorry, let me just share my screen again. Because on this version of the Bhagavad Gita, as you'll see here, Sorry, tech problems. In this version of the Bhagavad Gita, you have the original Sanskrit. Here you can see the original Sanskrit right here. Oops. We'll leave that. You can see the original Sanskrit. And then what you can see here is a Roman transliteration. And that's very, very wonderful, because what that Roman transliteration allows you to do is chant the Sanskrit verses, even if you're not familiar with Sanskrit. So here you can see you can actually recite these verses. And then there's a word for word translation here. And then there is an English translation of the verse. And then there's a purport, and that purport is giving a commentary. And so what we'll be doing in the course is we'll be looking at different verses of the Bhagavad Gita, analyzing some of the words and looking at some of the concepts that come out. And this is an open forum. We're going to give everyone an opportunity to discuss it, to challenge it, to see how you feel it may relate to your life. And I think we're going to go on an amazing journey. The Bhagavad Gita flows through 18 chapters. And it goes totals to 700 verses. And broadly speaking, the great teachers have said that the Bhagavad Gita is split into three sections. So there are five topics, but the five topics flow over three sections. And in these three sections, there are three different types of emphasis that Krishna gives. The first six chapters are known as Karma Yoga, and they're very much about how to live in the world, how to navigate life, how to connect all your activities in this world in such a way that they lead to spiritual progression and spiritual upliftment. The middle six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita are known as the Yoga of Love or Bhakti Yoga. How to come into communion with the divine, how to see spirituality within everyone, how to foster real relationships in which there are deeper connections. And the final six chapters are known as the Yoga of Knowledge, which are really about detachment and learning to let go. These are the three essential messages of the Bhagavad Gita: how to live, how to love, and how to let go. And I often say this to people: if you learn how to live, how to love, and how to let go, you won't walk through this world, but you will float through this world. And so you can see now I'm sharing with you slowly, slowly. I'm hoping you're building a picture of how the Bhagavad Gita is beginning to share with us a whole different vision of how to approach reality. So as I said, the Bhagavad Gita is spoken in Sanskrit. Between Krishna and Arjuna, it's 700 verses, and it's not a long conversation. It just goes on for about 45 minutes. It has 18 chapters, five topics, which we discussed today in the triangle, including the sixth aspect, which is yoga, because essentially the Bhagavad Gita is a book of yoga, spiritual connection. And the flow of the Bhagavad Gita is a journey through three sections: how to live, Karma Yoga, how to love, Bhakti Yoga, and how to let go of attachments, let go of toxic relationships, let go of mindsets and attitudes and character traits that don't serve you. Those are the three sections of the Bhagavad Gita. And essentially the Bhagavad Gita, as I mentioned, is what we call a yoga shastra, or a book of understanding spiritual connection. Many, many eminent people have read the Bhagavad Gita. Einstein, Gandhi. Gandhi said, when doubts haunt me, when disappointments stare me in the face and I see not one ray of hope on the horizon, I immediately pick up the Bhagavad Gita. And as I read one of the verses, I immediately begin to smile in the midst of overwhelming sorrow. I'm infused with hope and vision for the future. Very beautiful. Gandhi expresses his appreciation for the spiritual vision that the Bhagavad Gita gave him and continued and gave him throughout his life. The Bhagavad Gita has been translated into 60 languages. Over 100 million copies have been shared across the world. And the Bhagavad Gita helps us to develop a visionary mindset. Oftentimes we're looking at our life and we're just constantly looking for explanations of the past. All of our questions are about the past. Why did this happen? Why me? Why is the world like this? How could such a terrible thing have happened? But the Bhagavad Gita gives us a visionary mindset of giving us inspiration for the future. And as we become inspired about the future, we're able to frame the past, digest the past, learn from the past, and move on progressively, seeing that there's a beautiful journey ahead of us. Oftentimes, when we have to make decisions, then we're just looking for immediate direction. We're looking for someone to just tell us what we should do. We're looking for an immediate answer. But what the Bhagavad Gita does is it gives you timeless principles. And when you understand these principles deeply, you will be able to make any decision in any situation because you will know the cardinal laws of how the world works and the nature of the self in this world. And therefore, it will be much easier to navigate decision-making in this world because you'll understand the principles of life. Oftentimes in the limited mindset, we look for instant relief. We just want instant relief from pain, instant relief from discomfort. But what the Bhagavad Gita does is it helps you to find permanent solutions, to not just cover over difficulties or patch them up or brush them under the carpet or just hide them away in the closet. But the Bhagavad Gita says, take this pain, take this difficulty and look at it and digest it and grow from it. The Bhagavad Gita says, turn pain into purpose. Turn problems into progressiveness. That is the great opportunity because it's furnishing you with the mindset of being a visionary. In the world today, our educational systems tell us what to think. We go to universities and we memorize things. But how many of us deeply learn critical thinking? The Bhagavad Gita is a book which is teaching us not what to think, but how to think. It's a book which is helping us to broaden our ability to digest reality by developing a sagacious mind and sagacious spiritual intellect. And so just see the opportunity of what we have when we access a book like the Bhagavad Gita and we access this wisdom. Elevating our vision is perhaps the greatest thing we can do. And therefore, Think Gita 101, what we're going to be trying to doing humbly, not just through talks, but through interaction, through exercises, through questions and answers, is making this knowledge accessible, applicable, and hopefully inspirational for you so that you come out of this session and you go back to the world seeing it in a different way. Next week, our first major session will be entitled The Inner Arjuna. Because when you read the Bhagavad Gita, you're not just reading a book between Krishna and Arjuna, or two characters from 5,000 years ago. You're reading a book which is a conversation between the Supreme and the soul, between divinity and the individual. And we're going to be looking at how actually that Arjuna and all the questions he asks and everything he's going through is actually everything I'm actually going through in my life. And the answers that Krishna gives Arjuna are may well be answers that I have to take note of in my life. The next session we're going to do is we're going to have a guided tour through the Bhagavad Gita. We're going to go through all 18 chapters in like 45 minutes. And I'm going to attempt to show you the amazing, profound spiritual self-development journey that Krishna takes Arjuna on and how we can benefit from that. In the third session, we're going to look at yoga in a deeper way, not just the physical yoga, not just the yoga of the mind, but we're going to look at the deepest type of inner yoga and what yoga is in its essence and why yoga is such a misunderstood but also such a powerful thing in the world today. And then in the final session, we're going to look at wisdom that breathes. We're going to look at how the Bhagavad Gita, if you apply it in your life, it can change the people around you. It can change your families, your communities. It can change the world. And we're going to be looking at why the Bhagavad Gita is wisdom that needs to breathe, wisdom that needs to resonate around the world, wisdom that needs to be shared, because we're living in a world that's suffocating from materialism. And the solutions that people are providing are just not getting to the root of the problem. And so all we humbly ask of you on this journey is what Krishna asks Arjuna to do. Because after Krishna has spoken the entire Bhagavad Gita, he looks at Arjuna and he says, think about it, analyze it, introspect on it, reflect upon it. And then he looks at Arjuna and says, you're an intelligent person. After that, do what you want to do. And so all we're asking you to do is allow a bit of spiritual disruption to enter your life, allow a bit of spiritual disruption to maybe uncover some of the lives that maybe we've accepted for so much of our lives, and allow the spiritual disruption to awaken a bigger why that can help us to fulfill our greatest potential in this life. So thank you so much. It's a little difficult being on a call with 750 people. You know, normally when I teach or share or facilitate sessions, I really try for interaction. But you'll have to bear with me for today. We just have to be a little bit like this. But in our other sessions around, we're going to have more interaction and be hearing from all of you. But I hope that today's journey took you to the shore of the Bhagavad Gita, and that now you're excited to dive in. And I'll invite Raj to come on. And I hope some of you have been sharing your questions with him. If you do have questions, by all means, you can email it or send it over to him on the chat or to me. And we're just going to spend 10, 15 minutes of your time. I know it's 9 o'clock in the evening, but we're going to spend a bit of time having a bit of a discussion. So Raj, would you like to come on and spotlight yourself and maybe share with us some of the thoughts or some of the questions that are on the minds of our wonderful participants today?
Yeah, thank you so much, Keshav Swami. Yeah, we've got a lot of nice messages and people saying it's eye-opening, a great class, and they're really loving the session. And it's been really great. People are really, being inspired. One question, the first question we had is from Pooja Harshal. So she's asked, why is the word yoga at the end of each section? So you mentioned the three different yoga. So why is the word yoga there?
Yeah, that's such a great point. Because yoga or connection is what we're really looking for. You know, they did an analysis and they were trying to ask people, what do you do to relax? And you can think about this. And the top four answers when they asked people, what do you do to relax, was I go to a movie, I go on holiday, I take intoxication, or I go to sleep. Right. Now, I just want you to think of those four things: take intoxication, watch a movie, go to sleep, or go on holiday. And the constant theme behind all four of those things is that they are all means of escape. So it's quite interesting that what people are doing when they're trying to relax is basically they're trying to escape to a different space. They're trying to connect with a different space. But when you watch a movie, the movie ends. When you go on holiday, you have to come back. When you take intoxication, there's the morning after, the night before. And when you go to sleep, at one point you have to wake up. None of those escapes or connections to another space give us any permanent relief. But what the soul really seeks is connection to another world, connection to another reality. And therefore, yoga is what we seek in our heart in the deepest sense. And therefore, every chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is a yoga. Every section of the Bhagavad Gita is a yoga. It's amazing. The first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know what it's called? The yoga of dejection. The yoga of depression. The yoga of despondency. Put your hand up if you want to sign up for the yoga of dejection course. But it's very interesting that dejection, depression, demotivation, sometimes that feeling of being distressed in the world, it acts as a yoga because it forces us to question, it forces us to look deeper, and it forces us to connect to a higher reality and seek answers. So what the reason why yoga is such a prominent thing in the Bhagavad Gita is because yoga is what we seek, connection, because we have a vacuum within, and that vacuum can only be filled with connection.
Wow, and we're all really excited to get connected now. So it's a great starting point for us. I've got another question in from Sushant. Very interesting question. So there's so many other books out there, so many other religious books, you could say. Why the Bhagavad Gita? Why should we invest in this book?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is that the fact that we're here on a call today discussing the Bhagavad Gita is not to say you shouldn't read any of those other books. There are amazing books in the world, books on self-development, books on spiritual insight, books on philosophy, the great theological books of our times. And Krishna actually explains in the Bhagavad Gita that there is truth in all of these things. And there are great techniques and tools that you can benefit from reading a vast array of literature. And so we do that. And that's definitely beneficial. And that's definitely encouraged. Today here on this course, we're focusing on the Bhagavad Gita because perhaps the Bhagavad Gita is a book in which it encompasses such a wide array of topics in such a practical way that relates so closely to the human condition that there's a certain relevance and immediate benefit that one can gain from the Bhagavad Gita that, in my humble opinion, is unparalleled. The Bhagavad Gita talks about everything from religion to relationships, lifestyle to leadership, everything from science to sociology. It just, as we say, contains the keys to like life, the universe, and everything. And so it's such a vast literature, but presented in such a succinct way, which relates so closely to the human condition that it just has an immediate impact. And that's what we're trying to do, because we're trying to spiritually disrupt the world.
Amazing. Thank you so much. So yeah, lots of comments coming through and lots of questions and messages. I've got another question from Serena Sharma. She's asked something about what you talked about earlier about, I think you gave us a bit of a homework for it as well. So picking out three things that in our life is a lie that we think is a truth. Yeah. Now, what Serena's asked around that is, do some people, are they scared of finding out the truth, that their truth was a lie? So do some people just want to stay unconscious?
Oh yeah. Well, we have a saying in the English language, ignorance is bliss, isn't it? I remember also there was a movie some point, and then there was an interaction and someone said, "You want the truth? You want the truth? You can't handle the truth." I think it was it was an epic movie scene. I can't remember which movie, but it's kind of like that. It's scary. It's scary to begin questioning our life. It's scary to begin thinking that I invested so much of my life into so many things that now I'm kind of saying were not what I thought them to be. I've gone on a certain trajectory for 20, 30, 40 years, and now you're telling me to shift it? And that's scary. And therefore, for most people, it's easier to ignore it. It's easier just to say, let's just carry on. But there are some people who can't do that. Because the intrigue, the excitement, the hunger, the potential of discovering what's beyond just the safe options, what everyone's told you in life, that drives them forward. And so I would say it requires bravery. The spiritual journey requires deep bravery. You see, we're all on a Zoom call here. And it doesn't require that much bravery to come on a Zoom call. It's quite nice. You can just have it on and have your dinner and it's all fine. But it will require deep bravery to think about this knowledge and then to look deeply at our lives and ask ourselves what has to change, because we don't like to change. We just don't like to change. But ultimately, by changing, by evolving, by growing out of old habits and taking a journey into the unknown, we begin discovering amazing things and unlocking parts of life that we never knew existed. That's the offer. So you have to be brave. You have to be courageous. You have to be bold. And fortune favors the brave. Spiritual life is risky business.
Thank you so much. There's so many great questions coming in. It's like, I think this could be a whole question and answer session in itself. Maybe we'll do a couple more because, I mean, I haven't even read all the questions and I'm just fielding through them. But it's so great your questions are coming in. And what we'll actually do is capture all these questions so maybe we can pose and answer them going forward. One question came in from Alex Murray. And he's asked, is it acceptable to read any version of the Gita? Because there's so many versions out there of the Bhagavad Gita, and some are a bit more accessible, some are not. So what's your take on which version of the Gita we should read? You did touch upon reading as it is.
Yeah. Of course, in all the versions of the Bhagavad Gita, you will find the same verses. And therefore, the narrative of the Bhagavad Gita, no matter which version you get, will be unchanged. Of course, the interpretation of those verses may vary. There are different schools who interpret the Bhagavad Gita in different ways. And we are presenting to you the interpretation or the presentation of the Bhagavad Gita from the Bhakti school. Of course, we will recommend this version of the Bhagavad Gita as something which is incredibly accessible, as I mentioned, something which is applicable and something which is inspirational. And therefore, we focus on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. I don't think it's for us on this call to tell you what you should and shouldn't read. We want you to think. And we're trying to present the Bhagavad Gita as it is, without diluting or without adding any extraneous things into it. And so what we would present on this course, what we're asking you to do is think about it. And we're recommending the Bhagavad Gita as it is, as the recommended reading for this course. If you have another Bhagavad Gita that is dear to you, then by all means, you can continue to keep that Bhagavad Gita. And maybe as we go along the journey, you can bring in your insights and ideas from what you're reading, and we can have a discussion on that. So again, we're not here to tell you what to think. We're just here to help each other learn better how to think and critically look at things from different perspectives. And that's really what we're going to do.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Keshav Swami. That's a really nice message for us. And maybe, do you think it's time we should now?
I think it's time to, we don't want to, go on too long this evening, but we do want you to stay on just for a few minutes because we are, as I said, trying to create a community here, and a community means that we got to be connected somehow. But as you saw from all of the messages this morning, we're all in different places. I'm here in Watford. Some of you are on the other side of the world. Some of us are really, really close, but life and different duties and responsibilities means we are far apart. And so we're going to stay connected through our mighty networks, which is really our online community. And we're going to continue the interaction and the exchange and the questioning and exploration on the network. And so I'd just like to invite our technical whiz kid, Mukund, onto the call. And he's just going to share with you a little bit about the network, how it works. We've already had nearly 1,300 people sign up onto the network. And some of you are on the WhatsApp groups. So we encourage you to make the leap, take the plunge. If you're not a tech geek, don't worry. You'll figure it out. It's not an ocean you'll drown in. And get onto Think Gita Mighty Networks, because we want to have that interaction there. And I'm just going to hand over to Mukund because he's our technical whiz kid who'll give you a little bit of a demo of how to do it all. Thank you, Mukund, for being online.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone. Please bear with me for just 5 minutes as I'll quickly walk you through this thing called Mighty Networks, which you already might be familiar with. So do you see my screen yet? Yeah. Okay. Amazing. So we all shared this link called community.thingira.org with you, which was all over the web, your social media, etc. So obviously you would have landed somewhere like this, and this gives you a bit of an overview about the course and what we're really doing, along with our social links for Thingita as well as the WhatsApp group. But to actually get in there, you obviously had to sign up. So you would have clicked the join button and essentially made an account. And making an account also is very simple. You can, of course, join with your Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, or Apple profiles, so social profiles, or just create a classic account with just your name, email, and password. That's all, literally, right? And once you did that, you would have entered something like this. So do you see my screen now where I'm kind of showing the network's interior? Yes, okay. So once you kind of signed up on that Mighty Network, you can enter this internal site, which is community.thingira.org/feed, right? And this is essentially a one-stop place to kind of stay in touch with the Thingita community between Thursday to Thursday, because we meet 1 hour on Zoom on Thursday evenings. But between those two Thursdays, what do you do? So here, this is just like, think of it like a Facebook or any social media, any social network, but private to Thingita. So everybody here is a Thingita student or member, just like yourself, right? You can see where they're from. You can interact with others. So like we have Raj here. If I want, I can just chat with him, right? And then, you know, if you've connected or made any friends along the way, you can, of course, chat with them. Now, if you want to be private about it, you can obviously go to your settings and disable chats, right? So that nobody can text you. I know a lot of people have texted me, for example, over the last many days with questions, etc. But now I've disabled chats, so no one can chat with me. We've also kind of made a little bit of a welcome checklist for you. So as soon as you join, we'd love for you to obviously go into the course page, download the app. So, of course, very difficult or tedious for people to go on the PC browser version every time. So just go on the mobile app. It's as simple as WhatsApp or, you know, Facebook, Instagram, any app you have on your phone. Just download the app, adjust your notifications, and spread Thingita with others. Please invite someone to the network. So share this link with others and they can also join. I hope you found some benefit out of this session today and more people can also join. We do have capacity. We have no limit. Now, if you go in here to Thingita 101 with SB Keshavaswamy, here's where the fun part is, right? So you can see all the upcoming events. So the four events which Keshavaswamy kind of mentioned today. You can see the dates, the times, the time zones. A lot of you are asking about time zones as well. Everything is in here, along with the Zoom link to join also, right? But it doesn't stop there. We also have a lot of posts. You can see which members have been active. And you will also be able to then see the recordings for these sessions starting tomorrow. So today's session, the recording, we're going to post it on this Thingita 101 course page tomorrow. So if any of your friends, family have missed this session or want to catch up, or even if they join a little later, say they join in the next few days, they can still catch up on this intro session and equally yourself as well. Or if you want to rewatch and think about it from a different perspective. So all recordings are going to be put on this private course page. And I know a lot of you are engaging because my bell icon is dinging, dinging, dinging. But very quickly, just to wrap things up, the biggest and most important thing is the course feed, right? So the way we've done it is we don't want to spam you. We don't want you to get spammed by others, which means you can't post here, only the hosts can. But what we do is we create questions from time to time. Like I created a question here, which Alexander, thanks Alex for chairing this. Alexander's chaired this a minute ago. Do you have any questions from the intro session? Please keep it specific to the content discussed in Zoom meeting only. And then you can ask your questions here and we'll try to answer them as and when we see it. Also the homework from Keshavaswamy, which I see Crystal has already answered. So the homework said by Keshavaswamy was, tell us, what is a tradition based on so-called culture, based on so-called truth, which is actually a lie? And this is your homework. So you can, of course, answer the homework here as well. And we can have a bit of a discussion here based on the responses you share. You can like, share other people's things, etc., and kind of make a community out of it. And then I see here, in one word, tell us how you're feeling after the first session, right? So please do answer this right now. You're all on the community. There's, I think, 1,300 of you already on the community. So this is for those of you who have not joined, or those of you who have joined but not interacted much yet. Please do make use of this. This is the best way we can kind of stay in touch with each other, interact, and really grow beyond the sessions as well. So in one word, I said inspired and excited. Preeti also said excited. I would love to hear a bit more variety in your dictionaries. So please do share. What are you feeling after the first session? And we also did a poll. How familiar are you with the Bhagavad Gita? So our sample size is not that big. I see just around 15-ish people have replied, but most people have read bits of it. Now let's see by the end of this poll, how many people have read how much, so that we kind of know where everyone's coming from. I personally have also just read bits of it. So I'm very excited for Keshava Swami to teach me the rest. But that is Mighty Networks for you. Please do make use of these interactive elements. Please engage, download the app, chat with each other, engage with each other. And you will also be able to watch the recordings here. If you bear with me for just a moment, I'm going to share my screen. So I'll take my video off because I want to share my phone screen now. And I just want to show you how the app looks like, because I get that, the desktop version is not the best for everyone. So just bear with me, please. Just want to see if my phone screen is visible. Do you see my phone screen?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, thanks, Raj. So whatever I showed you, that exact thing is on your mobile. So I just have this Mighty Network app here, right? I have 29 notifications. Don't worry, you won't, because I'm an admin, but you won't get all this. And you can do exactly what I showed you right here on your phone, right? So you can get all the latest updates, go to courses, right? And it's exactly the same. Go to feed and answer this poll, right? Like I've answered it here, or answer a question we asked you. Literally anything, right? Or chat with someone, right? So please feel free to download the app and engage on Mighty Networks. That's all from me. If you do have any questions, you will notice one thing. I have said on my Mighty Networks profile that I'm not contactable by Mighty Networks. So please do get in touch with we're all there to kind of help you. So please do feel free to message anyway. Thank you, Garima, for answering insightful. Thank you all for your engagement. Thank you all for joining again. That's all from me. I'm looking forward to your engagement on the app and our community.
Thank you so much, Mukund. Really appreciate. You can show your love to Mukund by giving him a wave or a reaction. He's the one that actually set up the whole community. He did it in like 2.5 hours. This guy's like a whiz kid, you know? Thank you so much. Alex, showing the love. Thank you so much. Yeah, so it's going to be a journey. Today is just like an initial, dip in the ocean, as I said. But it's so nice to see all of you here participating. We're going to have stuff in person as well, and we want to bring some of you here to have discussions. And we're really looking forward to it. And just the final thing I'll say is, we're having off like our next session next Thursday. And if no one, if you know people who might be interested that haven't come today, they can still join, because that will be the first session. But you don't have to wait till Thursday, because on Tuesday, next Tuesday, our very own Raj, Think Gita Raj, is going to be doing a guided meditation with anyone who's interested. So the Think Gita community is wisdom, and it's thinking, but it's also some practical techniques for you to take away with you. So that will be next Tuesday, and we'll be sending out information about that. Raj, any last words from you?